Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Julie Bates with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 305. And in today's episode, I am going to continue a theme that has been very popular in this podcast series, and that's more on stuff with puppies. And today's is going to be a lot to do generally with all puppies. I mean, whatever breed and whatever use, but certainly for the performance and hunting dogs that a lot of my listeners have. Puppy training is very important. It would be, I always make analogies. It'd be like having a kid. You have a baby, and oh, it's wonderful. And you feed it and change it and pick it up, carry it around. But finally, when the kid's about 10, you know, you go, man, maybe we should teach him to read and write. You know, eventually he's going to have to leave home and get a job. So you've missed a lot of the best time for a young human to use their brain in certain ways that are going to be very important later on. You know, kids learn to read when they're 4, 5, 6, whatever it is, different ages, different kids, when they're ready. Then that's perfect. They learn languages really well, I understand, when they're young. You know, if you teach them that numbers and all that kind of stuff is fun, they can do math. Because math, we have to do math all the time. Just calculating gas mileage or your speed limit, things like that. So if at the right time we teach them how to use their brains in this way and how useful it is, then it's the best thing for that young human. And it is similar with puppies. Now, I don't mean you need to start teaching them to sit and stay and lay down and do all this stuff, or, you know, be steady on a retrieve or whatever. I'm not saying you do that when they're 8, 9, 10 weeks old. But you do understand some very important things about a puppy head. And then a puppy head, as it develops into an adolescent dog head and ultimately into an adult dog head. And so if you can start with your youngster, just with that in mind, just like you would with a human child. And it's like, all right, let's do everything we can within reason, you know, to make when this kid goes to school, or when this kid gets a job, or when this kid has to count change out at the store, that they can do it easily. Let's do the same thing with puppies. And I'm not sure that people always think about it that way. So one of the worst things that, well, that's a negative way to start that out, but one of the things that people do easily, they do it with kids, and they certainly do it with dogs, is they don't allow them to become ultimately what they are, which is, if you think about it, they are problem solvers. Just like you are and I am. We are problem solvers, right? We have to solve the problem of always having a place to stay and being able to eat and stay out of the weather and have a vehicle if we have to go somewhere. We are problem solving all the time. You know, there's a traffic jam on the road to work, so you've got to problem solve and find another way to get there. That's what we do all the time. And in their lives, if allowed to be, they are the same way. If you think about a dog in the wild, right? They've got to find shelter, find safety, find other animals to band together for protection. They have to find things to eat. They have to find water to drink. All of that. It is problem solving all the time. And if we look at them a little more that way and factor that into how we interact with them and what we do with them, that makes, when you do start more formal training that they're not ready for as little guys, that makes it just a natural conclusion of what they've already been doing. And so they are ready to continue to learn because they've been taught to learn. So I watched before I came and I walked my little dog before I came in to do this podcast. And there was a young lady in front of me with a kind of a pit bull looking. I don't know what it was, but it was looked like a real strong dog with that little ears that they have. And she was in front of me, and her dog was fascinated with my dog. Okay, and most are, because I don't know whether they think I'm walking a possum or a weasel or something. But anyway, the dog was fascinated. And I don't let other dogs come up because I don't know what they'll do to Elsie. So I'm always real careful about that. Well, she kept walking and the dog just laid down. And so she just let the dog lay down and just stayed there. And I'm going, all right, I'm not going to encounter this dog. So I go way around, and I think she's obviously insulted because I'm avoiding her and her dog. But her dog just said, I'm not going to walk with you. I want to go look at that. And she tried to pull on it, and it didn't work. So she just gave in. And so she had a devil of a time until finally, you know, we got it out of sight enough where her dog just gave in. And I thought, wow, that would, you know, the dog just laid down, said, I'm not moving. And she went, well, okay. So she had taught the dog to just exert its will, and that would work for it. So the dog was problem solving that way. It's like, oh, whenever I really want something, just put my body into it and I get it. I don't know if she would believe me if I told her you taught that to that dog. But she had, and I had watched it right there. And the dog had learned very well, you know. Physicality is how you get what you want. So that's just an example of what I'm talking about, is we need to teach these little guys, or begin to form their brains into a way where they understand what the relationship is, and that as they are ready to accept and understand their responsibility in it, that they get to do some of their own problem solving. That's what that dog was doing, was solving the problem of not being able to go look at that little dog. Just lay down. Solved that problem well. Had been taught, I guess, that. Had been allowed to. Actually, I think the dog was teaching the lady how this worked. But anyway, we have to, in my experience and opinion, teach even the little guys, about how they have some accountability for their actions. For example, I'll use on little bitty guys, jumping on people. Everybody hates that, right? Well, no, they don't hate it when they're little and cute. It's when they're 65 or 75 pounds and they don't like it. Or when they jump embarrassingly on their, you know, neighbor or grandma or whatever, and then they get real mad and we got to go to the trainer. So the dog has never been made accountable for its physicality. Never been made accountable for its physicality. Like the dog that I saw this morning, it just could do whatever it wanted physically, and she responded to it. So little puppies jumping, making noise, the chewing thing, that's a thing that they have to do with those teeth are growing and all that stuff. So just, you have to have things for them to chew on. You can't really do all that. But the physicality, for example, is going to become very important for people who train in the retriever stuff like we do. You do not want a dog who, when you throw something, comes back and slams into your legs. Now, when they're 8, 12 weeks old, cute, right? That's just cute. Look, though, they're so exuberant. Meanwhile, they're allowed to smash into you. So you're teaching them that it's okay to smash into you. And you don't think that because it's just so cute and it's running hard back to you and everybody loves that, until they get a little bit bigger and it becomes an issue. I had gotten a number of those dogs in for training. I get somebody's dog in and go out and throw the happy bumper for it, and it's like, this dog is going to smash into me. So I quickly taught them that that was not okay. I'm not going to go into how you do that stuff, but that dog had been taught that kind of thing. So when you have your little bitty dogs, your little guys, think about all the things having to do with their physicality. For example, don't let them jump up on you. Go down to where they are. Then so that they learn, they always get the good stuff, the affection and the attention, when they have all four on the floor. Then you go down with them, and then you guys can just smooch and stuff. But when you're up in the air, assaulting you, even as a cute little puppy, it never works. And you can stop that very easily. One bite, don't pick them up unless you have to, for putting them on the vet table or in the crate or in the vehicle or something. But then just teach them, you know, your feet on me, not a thing. And if you do that very early, you will never have that problem. All right, so now they know how to, in a lot of places, they know to be aware of their presence and their impact on you. That starts from day one. Another example of that is, if I hope you use a crate in some of your training in transporting the dogs. So, even getting into the vehicle. Don't let them go smash into the crate or get in. Make them sit down and wait and then be asked to get in. And the same thing coming out. Even a little puppy isn't physically going to, mentally going to grasp all that. But they certainly can do that. You know, you can just make them stay in the crate, open it up, the kennel, whatever, the backyard, the door. And then, say, okay, and then, or whatever you want. And then let them come in. So if they learn, I can't smash into doors, I can't smash into kennel doors, I can't smash into gates, I can't smash into the crate door, I can't do any of that. And so again, they become aware of their physicality. There are only upsides to that. There are no downsides to that. And that's something that you can start very early. And one, by not teaching them, that they can do whatever they want, but by showing them that they do that. Now, let's talk about some problem-solving thing. And so, and that's kind of a consequence type deal, and if you can think about it that way. Let's say your dog, your little puppy likes to just maul your old dog. I've gotten that question so many times. They pull on their lips and their ears and they bite them and they, just treat them like it's their toy. Now, for me, I never allowed that. I know some people do, and then until the old dog gets mad and scares it or does something, let the dogs teach the stuff. I always did. For me, no animals, and that's probably because I always had a lot of animals, no animal can ever hurt another one. And not in play, not in serious, nothing. Not going to happen. Not acceptable. And if they want to be a bully, and this includes when they're little tiny even, if they want to be a bully, then they're going to have to face me. So I am always the consequence when they try to harm another or just play too rough or make the old dog's ears get torn or pull on their lips. They face me. So I let them make the choice. And again, here's where we're starting to teach them to be accountable for themselves. I don't prevent the deal. It's like, okay, you go ahead and do it. And then you're going to deal with me and you won't like that. And so, see what you do if you try it again. And, when you're real serious and you give them a consequence that they don't want. And who decides what that consequence is? The dog, not you, not me, not some book you read or the trainer on Tuesday evenings. Because some dogs, it takes very little for them to go, holy cow, I'm not going to do that again. And for others, it's like a battle. It's like, okay, I'm going to prevail. And then you got to up that ante until you find a consequence that dog says, okay, I'm good. I'm not going to do this again. So that's why there's not an answer to any of these things. It is the consequence that works with that particular dog. So again, I'm not going to just prevent things from happening, unless there's really a safety issue, obviously. But if it's a behavioral thing, it's like, all right, when you do that, you're not going to like what happens. So choose. That's part of the philosophy of making these animals accountable on all kinds of stuff. And I'll even say on the eating thing. Most of us especially with retrievers, eating, not even an issue, right? I mean, they will pour rocks into a bowl, they're going to eat it. But one of the things, and I had to do this a lot with dogs that had been free fed or kind of mollycoddled at home, and when they would come to the training kennel, we get dinner in the evening, right? After all the work's done and everybody's aired, we either eat on the truck before you come into the yard, or you air out and then you eat in your kennel. And some dogs, would be whatever. They didn't want it or didn't like it or whatever. And so they had 5 minutes and then the bowl got picked up. Now, I know that might seem kind of mean, but it always worked. If an animal was just picky, or something, it always worked. Pick it up. Dinner time the next day, they probably eat. Absolutely the day after that. They're going, I'm really looking forward to this dinner. And we got, because when you're traveling with dogs and training dogs, and they need to eat every day. It's very important. These are athletes. And pickiness doesn't belong in there. So there was a consequence. They weren't enticed and throw, you know, rock something on there, put grease on it or whatever to hope to get them to eat. It's like, all right, you get to choose. Pretty soon you're going to get kind of hungry and you're going to want to eat. So that approach was, it's nonviolent. It's not horrible. It's just putting the accountability and the choice back on the dog for that stuff. And so in many of the behavioral things, you know, people have one of the puppy things people get is puppy teeth, right? They're like little needles. They're like little razor bits and they can just slice right through your hand. So same thing on those kind of behavioral things. Just say, okay, if you're going to do that, this is what's going to happen to you. And I guarantee you, you get a consequence that's meaningful enough to that dog, then they're going to stop. And so you are teaching them to make the decision, to do the troubleshooting. And then they stop exhibiting the behaviors and they have become accountable for their actions and their physicality in themselves. And if you do that on a little guy, it makes everything so much easier as they get bigger and they get more powerful and you're asking more out of them and you're beginning to teach them certain things. They already know, you know, listen, I got to pay a lot of attention to this because I have to be the one, I need to learn this. I need to understand what they're teaching me. There's no fear here. I'm not talking about any fear at all. I'm talking about a certain mental perspective. You know, I don't know about you, but when I grew up in my family, I didn't smart off to my parents. It just wasn't in my interest. And neither my kids didn't either. But mine were, it was a, they weren't afraid like I was. But it's just like, we're not going to have that here. It just doesn't fit into our deal. And, you know, you don't want the consequence if you do that. And so you don't have it. Same with dogs, but it doesn't have to be fear-based. Unless they're kind of dangerous, then I guess it probably does. If they're really going to hurt something, then you have to speak their language always. Not your language, not how you like to do things. And I'm going to talk about that on the consequences. Because I know a lot of people, so many people have told me, oh, I don't think I could ever enforce sit with my little plastic wiffle bat. It's on my video. I do it right in front of everybody. Little plastic wiffle bat. You can't hurt them with it. But you pop them on the bottom once you've taught them sit to enforce sit. And it's like, now you're going to sit when I tell you because you don't want the consequence. And a lot of obedience is very good with that. But the consequence is not what I like to do. There's some dogs I never used that kind of pressure on at all. Just wasn't appropriate. Unnecessary, didn't do it. There's some other dogs where that bat wasn't enough because they were like, no, I do not feel like sit. And so it took a consequence for not giving me good effort that they had to go, you know, I think I'll just sit. So it's important to understand that your dog is somewhere on that scale of doesn't take much or takes moderate amount or takes, you know, quite a bit. And it doesn't matter what you like or what you're comfortable with. If you really want to teach this animal so that it understands and you have a lifetime of this understanding and cooperation, and man, then they don't argue. They learn that arguing is of absolutely no value. None. It's just to resist or not do it is just not a thing for them. So as you teach them challenging things, be steady on marks, hold your point in the open field, don't chase birds, you know, go out 200 yards and stop on a dime on a whistle when I blow it, get in the water when I point you at it. All of that stuff is done far more easily if the dog goes, all right, show me what this is and explain it to me. And when I try to opt out and I find out there's a consequence, then I know right then, all right, let's don't do this. Let's just work hard to do this the way that I'm being taught. You know, it would have helped that lady with the dog that just laid down and went, I want to go see the dog. Of course, if that had been me, it would like, dog, you are going with me. You don't have a choice. But obviously their relationship was not one of giving the dog much accountability. So let me talk about transitioning puppy accountability into more formal training. And I'm going to use obedience. And a little bit in my last podcast, when I was talking about one specific individual with a really nice little dog, I was talking about making the dog accountable, actually, instead of doing all the stuff for them. And so when somebody's ready to begin obedience, and obedience is when you need it. I am never going to go at X weeks, you must do this, well, unless they're like 6 months old, you're too late right then. It's like, you need to do it before that. But when they're little, you know, when you really need it, then begin obedience. And when you begin obedience, whatever words you use and however you do it, it needs to be something that you say, all right, I'm changing up the rules, or maybe adding. I'm adding a few rules. You're not really changing anything because you've been making them accountable as a little puppy. So now we're going to start adding to that. So if you have a little dog that's already learned, you know, I have to kind of pay attention to you when you are interacting with me. Because if they're not paying attention to you when you try to interact, then you've taught them that that's okay. That's another thing you don't have to do with a little puppy. Wait, let's go back to a little puppy real quick. I'm sorry, I'm bouncing around here a little bit. But when you have a little dog and you call them and they don't come, you know what you do for that? Don't call them. That's what you do. When you don't have the obedience stuff, they're not ready for it, you don't have the tools, you know, then don't, if they're not going to come, don't begin to teach them that when you say here or whatever you say, that they don't have to pay any attention. Don't do that. So if they're not coming, then do whatever it takes. You could get out a dog toy, the puppy bumper. I don't care. There'd be a place to use a dog biscuit. Go ahead. Look at what I have. And then if you need to get them to you. But so don't give commands that are not enforced. Don't give any command that you're not prepared to enforce. So if it's time to teach the little dog to sit or do anything, then teach it to sit. And sit means your bottom goes down and it stays there till I say different. That's what sit means. So don't tell them sit by saying it repetitively, thinking that you are teaching them an association. Yeah, you're teaching them association, that you say stuff over and over and over and over again, and then finally you do stuff for them, and then eventually the nonsense ends. That's what's happening. So if you're going to teach a dog sit, teach the dog sit, the bottom goes down. Keep it in place. Keep the dog seated. If they're wrestling around and stuff, you're stronger than a little puppy, right? So keep them there until they learn, wow, every time he or she says sit, this is what I do. And then I have to wait to see what comes next. And if you do it that way, and always the same way, clear, make sure that they are, you know, these aren't guys are not as smart as you are, so they don't understand what you just assume they're getting. So make sure that if you tell them sit, you know, I'd even have them right now in right in front of me or right at my side, right? So it's like, all right, I'm going to always tell you sit where I have maximum mechanical advantage over you and I can make you sit down. And then we're going to be calm for a little while, sometimes 5 seconds, eventually sometimes a minute, finally. That, you know, that there's no, I'm not going to teach them that it only lasts for X seconds and boom, you're done. I'm going to teach them it lasts until I say we're finished or we're going to do something else. But if you teach them, this is the word and this is what you do, you know, like heel is a location, be over here at my side when I say heel, and then if I'm moving or whichever, you're at my side. Teach them that with extreme clarity and then hold them accountable. So if you taught your little dog sit and they're doing it really well, little puppy, okay, then just try one time, you know, say sit, see what they do. If they do nothing and they are waiting for you to enforce it, okay, then you are doing all of the work and you are the one accountable for the dog's reaction. And we need to transfer that accountability from you over to the dog. All of dog training is first teaching them what things mean, teaching them that it's you mean it very clearly, and then transferring the accountability over to the dog. And right there is where I lose a lot of people. I've seen people with dogs that are fairly trained, a year, year and a half, 2 years old, and they tell it to heel, which is get at my left side, and the dog kind of comes near, and then they pull it over, and then they set it down, and they're doing all the work, you know? And it's like, well, you heel and sit really well. Your dog's just letting you do whatever you want, moving them around. It's transferring the accountability over to that animal that is important. If you've done that in the upbringing of your puppy, it's going to make doing this more formal training much easier, because you're going to teach them what sit means, and then you're going to enforce sit. You know, again, with a, I do a little pop on the bottom, maybe a jerk up on the with the leash on the head and a little pop on the bottom, so that they understand that I'm going to enforce sit. If you always put your hands on them to enforce things, then they want you to do that. Most dogs, not all, but most dogs. It's like, oh, wait, you haven't put your hands on me yet. I'm not going to do anything. So that's why immediately after I've taught them, I transfer over to something that's not me, so that they're not going to require that I touch them. I push their bottom down, or I pull them over into a position, right? I'm transferring accountability to them. So when I get something else to enforce it, right, then that's not me touching them. And then again, the consequence for not sitting, if you've taught them sit, the consequence for not sitting is the word will be given again, because you don't just enforce something without the immediately prefaced instruction that you want. So if the little dog you've taught sit, you just said sit and it didn't sit, you say it again and you enforce it with your whatever you do. And by enforcing it, I don't mean pulling up on the leash, and I mean do something. If the consequence is, the enforcement is something that they don't really want to have happen again. And it has to, and again, the dog decides that level of enforcement, not you, not me. It's the one the dog says, all right, I'm going to sit the next time you tell me. It's that level of enforcement. And that's the consequence for not clearly executing the thing that you asked them to do. So by this, we've transferred the accountability over to the dog. Listen, you're going to want to sit when I say sit. And when they have a consequence that they don't want, they're going to go, you know, when I hear sit, I'm going to sit. Now, you have to have that kind of training for the really critical dog things. You know, you get the C&I dogs where, you know, if they don't do stuff right, somebody gets run over by a bus. So the way they're trained is they are conditioned into doing the right thing all the time. They have full accountability, right? They are fully accountable. And for the retriever stuff that we do with our dogs in our competition, right? They're doing the thing they love most of all, bird stuff. Oh, they love it. It is their heroin field. But they got to do it with our rules, right? They got to hunt within whatever range we want. And then they either, if they're flushing, you know, they got to flush and then not go after it. And if they are pointers, they got to point, stay on point. If we're going to run a water blind and it's 213 yards across the pond and up and out a little bit, and we blow a whistle, we don't have any tools of enforcement. They have to stop and sit, or tread water in the case of water, and look at us and then change the direction that we ask them to change. We have no way of enforcing any of that in competition, right? We have to have taught them, hey, well, this is a team thing. But if I tell you to sit at 213 yards out in the water, you're going to turn around and stop. And the way that you train, are able to train dogs to that level is if you've already, they already understand this dynamic. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to show you. I'm going to do that until you really understand. You're going to find out that if you ever kind of opt out and choose the wrong thing, I'm going to hold you accountable. I'm going to enforce something that we know. And then it's going to be something you're going, all right, all right, all right. I get it. I get it. You don't have to do that again. And then the dog, you have this cooperation thing, and you can win field trials and finish hunt tests and finish the national and all that kind of thing. But it's all based on how well you can transfer accountability fully over to the dog. And for those of you that have been around a while and seen a lot of trainers, there's trainers who use a lot of pressure, a lot of correction and pressure. There's a lot of really good ones, right? And then there's some, and I've seen them a lot in my life, who are just really comfortable. So what they like to do is punish a dog, which is not the same thing as transferring accountability to the dog. So the dog controls all the pressure of enforcement, whatever you want to call it. The dog controls it all. All they have to do is give their best effort to respond. That's all they have to do. They don't have to be perfect. They have to give their best effort to respond to what you do. So there's no place for punishment in there. If they opt out of doing their best trying to respond, then there will be a consequence. You know, and on a blind, it would be an indirect pressure on sit. Everybody knows that stuff. And then you have given them a consequence for what they've done, and they understand it because of how well you've taught them. And then they go, all right, I'm giving you my best effort again. And it moves on, as opposed to other styles of training where it's like, he's giving me the finger. We'll show him. And then you go punish him. And that's supposed to be their consequence for, you know, it's more like a barroom brawl than it is anything else. So that's why, you know, for me, the upfront work is so important, because when you teach as much as a puppy can do, accountability, and they can do stuff, they can not jump on you, they can be aware of their little bodies, you know, they can be aware of their teeth on you or on old Fang, they can be accountable for that if you make them do it. And when you begin to teach them and then make them responsible for working hard to respond. Again, I didn't say they had to be perfect. They have to give you their best effort to respond. And then as you go into the formal training, you have the understanding and the dynamic, personal dynamic, to be able to teach these guys really awesome things. And many times, and for those of you that have young dogs that are kind of doing surprisingly well, I'm going to tell you, I'll bet that is half or more, given that you have a talented dog, half or more why some young dogs can do things so rapidly and other ones not. It usually comes to the ones that are going real rapidly is because they understand. They have a very clear picture on what it is that they're doing and what the relationship between the two of you is. And when a little problem erupts, which always do, they always will, you have the means to address that in a way that the dog understands. So you don't have to use tons of pressure. You don't have to be angry. You have what it takes. You know it's either in your teaching was not adequate, or in your turning accountability over to the dog has not been done fully. And it's always going to be something along those lines, assuming the dog has the brains to learn what you're doing. And it really does come down to that. And if you want the trick fancy dog, or just a really nice dog you can walk through the park that doesn't want to attack every other dog that it sees or whatever those dogs are doing, if you don't want that, then when you get your little puppy, keep the accountability thing in the forefront of your interactions. Love them, have fun, you know, do all that stuff, but make sure that when you can, when you have every opportunity, like with a kid, if they like to read when they're four, get them books, let them read. You know, if they like to make music when they're 4 years old, let them make music, right? And so when you have a nice dog, a little puppy, and it can understand things and become accountable and have that kind of a relationship with them, man, you can do amazing things. And that's the primary way right there, is that. So, all right, I don't know if people are going, what is she saying? But that's a summation of what I've learned in a lifetime of working with these dogs, is that stuff. And I've had extreme success with my kids and with dogs that I've trained. And my little dog that I own, my little wiener dog, you know, I made her accountable for all kinds of things. Unless a bunny pops up, then I all bets off, but that's the dachshund. So I hope some people at least give that some thought, because it makes far less pressure in dog training, far less correction necessary. And, you know, you can move through all the dog training steps fairly easily once you get this. I teach very well, and then I make you accountable. So that's today's. Hope everybody's staying healthy, happy. Spring is on its way, even though we're having huge blizzards and extreme heat all at the same time. Odd stuff. I hope everybody's doing well, and I will be back next week.